it's gotten to the points where video cards are now getting water cooled for themselves.
Yeah. So those things can get really heated up.
And also, I need to be able to play Deus Ex, and I can't play Deus Ex. I can, but I won't. Anyways, we're going to start right now. Here we go. The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 438, recorded on September 14th, 2016. Welcome to the 438th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 271st episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. So yeah, last week was pretty big. A lot of stuff being introduced and then quickly forgotten. Well, sort of, kind of. Yeah, I mean, it was going to be a clean episode, except for the fact that Scott kept on laying F-bombs on Apple, and I decided to leave them in, so I marked the episode as, what's the word again, explicit. So, yeah, it's all Scott's fault if you weren't aware that last week's episode is explicit.
Because I have a problem. I wasn't aware I said any F-bombs.
Oh, you did a cluster bomb.
It was a red hot Apple take.
What was I mad about?
Mad about? I think you were most mad about Apple removing the headphones.
Oh yeah, I thought that was stupid.
Or the headphone jack. Yeah.
It was also that their cell phone costs
$900 for the best one.
Ridiculous price.
Yeah. Well, like, it was cell phones, you know, they're all ridiculous prices, but they always do the $30 per month thing. You know, for 2 years. As a matter of fact, the last payment of my Galaxy S5 is this month.
Oh, did you read about that? This isn't on here, but did you read about that thing about Note 5 batteries exploding?
No.
Oh, jeez.
I will say this, though. My iPad Air battery apparently overheated and bent my iPad. Apparently that's a thing. And it's weird because the glass doesn't break; it just bends along with it. And that's the thing. That's the thing about iPads. You know, they don't use plastic like Samsung does. No. They use actual glass. That's why iPhones and iPod Touches and Airs are all so fragile because they're using glass. And I had mine inside a book, you know, one of those book things. So there was no chance of it gonna have, you know, because basically the iPad is one big pane of glass.
Yeah. And you start using that transparent aluminum then.
Yeah, no, I don't. No. Because I never get it on straight and it looks ugly, and I always end up peeling it off anyway. So I just have the hard bookcase that you put it inside, and it's like a book. And it's still bent because the battery just overheated.
I meant Apple should use the transparent aluminum technology that's being used on, like, jet airplane canopies and whatnot, because they're really durable.
Yeah. Strike one, score one for Star Trek 4.
Yes.
And that was the Galaxy Note 7 I was talking about. Recently it came out, the battery explodes in certain phones. It was a big thing. Like, it became a really big deal because there was a story recently about a small little, I think 12-year-old child was playing on a phone, and it blew up in his hands.
Did you know that Samsung is probably going to be dropping the Galaxy? And all of them are going to be Notes and for the S8. And the thing is, they're just going to call the Galaxy Notes the Galaxy S8 and just discontinue the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Regular old Galaxy. Which is, I guess, is fine. I'm no longer on the fence about getting an S7 now, but I'm pretty sure that at some point they're going to say, oh, we got to fix this. you know, that the same thing happened with Sony Vaio laptops, too. They exploded.
Yeah.
That was a while ago. That was like, what, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, 7 years ago?
That's some real shoddy quality control there. They need to fix that.
Yeah. But I will say this, my S5, sometimes the battery gets real hot. As a matter of fact, that's what blew out my original 64-gigabyte card.
Yeah.
And I had to get it. It was fine because I replaced it with a 128 card that was really fast. So the S7, you know, I'm thinking about it because of the camera, mostly. The camera's really good. I've tested the low light. It's incredible. You know, and I need to shoot my TV show somehow. Actually, that's an idea I have. And I'm thinking about having each of us shoot on at least 1080p a conversation. What's it called? You know, something scripted. Well, not necessarily scripted. But, you know, talking on the cell phones and then having it air on my TV show.
That might be interesting.
And the thing is that you can watch it because it's on MNN.org live streams its channels. You know. And then I would post it on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
You know, afterwards. So there's an idea. Just something for an idea's sake. And the thing about it is that, you know, that's one way that I could do a show that I won't have to worry about people saying licensing for. Because now, you know, there's those stupid licensing bots. Just, you know, it's funny. If you ever watch Red Letter Media, they did a review. They did Plinketto number 2. And one of the things they said, which I found was hilarious, was that they view the content ID bots sort of like those bots from squid bots from Matrix. You know, those tracking bots from the Matrix that look like squids. They sort of view them as that.
They're not nearly so efficient, though.
No, that's true.
They're more like ED-209, just indiscriminately shooting at everything that even mm-hmm. comes close to what their category for activation is.
I don't know. It's ridiculous. At some point, they're gonna have to dump robots and actually have live people.
Yeah.
You know, and don't tell me they can't afford it. They make $4 billion a year in revenue. They can afford, say, $4 million paying to a bunch of people to check claims, you know?
Yeah, it makes sense to me. I mean, they should be able to – they could pay a lot of people a good amount of money to do that, you know, just go through videos each day and, you know, that's all you have to do.
Imagine
just watch videos.
You're just doing $40,000 a year for somebody just to sit down – and look at assigned YouTube videos, like maybe 300 a day. I mean, I personally might claw my eyes out after all that and never want to look at another video again. But, you know, it would be easy work, sort of like a data entry job, except the reverse. You're doing video and what's it called? Scanning work.
Mm-hmm.
The content ID says this looks suspicious. Check it out.
Content control. Yeah.
The biggest problem I have with YouTube is that it's a monopoly. It's so obviously a monopoly. And I looked at these stats, and the closest competitor to YouTube, in terms of video streaming content for paid anything, is Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it would be Twitch or something.
No. Well, it is Twitch, and then Hulu.
Mm.
You know, and then everything else, like Vimeo, is like 0.2%. of the video stream revenue market.
Yeah.
These people who make money off their YouTube videos, they're not going to get it from Vimeo or what's the other one? JC, you know, or Dailymotion. You know, they're not going to get money from them because not many people watch them. It's sad. And I know you've probably heard, like, in the past 2 weeks about YouTube now catering to advertisers and turning off revenue. Well, for shows that have, say, cursing.
Yeah.
My favorite.
Oh, yeah.
Politically divisive subjects. Oh dear, subjects that make the advertisers uncomfortable. I can just think of it now. Well, your video on Black Lives Matter has to come down because our advertisers find it uncomfortable.
Oh, it's even less than that. Just like, well, I think Phil
reporting on wars and not even showing the war.
Yeah, just really basic stuff. It's like, it's ridiculous. It's like they're being like way oversensitive and just, it's just getting out of hand.
But you know, yeah. In quote unquote defense, although it's not much of a defense, it's not much different than what television stations do with their advertisers. You know, but a lot of people have revenue streaming on their service that, you know, that all of a sudden YouTube says, well, nope, sorry, can't make a living on us now anymore. Well, we'll still take your money and your hits.
Yeah.
Anyways, this is depressing. We're gonna move on to what have you been playing, TJ?
Not a lot of new things this week. I've been on League of Legends a lot, but we'll get to that later.
Well, at least we have an expert on the subject.
I've been playing a couple games for review, but they're embargoed, so I can't really talk about them yet.
Did you see the new Star Trek Andromeda video?
I did. It looks good.
Yeah, they put it. The only thing I'm worrying about is it's going to be a fiasco like Dragon Age Inquisition. That's the only thing. So, Scott, what they did was they released a 4K video showing off the graphics and the HDR for Star Trek Andromeda and some bit of a cutscene.
Oh, you mean Mass Effect? You keep saying Star Trek.
Mass Effect. I'm sorry.
Lord, I thought you were talking about the. Okay, because I know there's a new Star Trek show coming out.
Oh, yeah, I know that. Yeah, and they're going to have Sulu be gay. They're going to have openly gay characters. Yay.
I don't remember Sulu being in it, but...
Well, canonically, the Abrams-verse...
Oh, you're talking about the movie.
No, I'm just... Okay. Well, also, the show is going to be based on the Abrams-verse, if I remember correctly.
It's in between Enterprise and... Trek, the original Trek. And yeah, it's in the Prime universe, I guess you want to call it. I don't know.
Thank God, not the Abrams verse. But in the Abrams verse, they made Sulu gay. Because George Takei is gay.
Even George Takei didn't care. He's like, eh, whatever.
Whatever. But they are going to have a gay character in Star Trek
Discovery?
Yeah, I think that's it. They're going to have a gay character there. So one of the things I noticed, though, they have no problems having girls kiss on shows because, you know, girl on girl is hot to a heterosexual male. When are they going to have... I wonder if they're ever going to have a male-male kiss on Star Trek. That would be sort of like Kirk kissing Uhura.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, the novels made Ensign Lynch gay... For those who don't know who Ensign Lynch was, he was the poor guy who got turned into a Borg in First Contact, who went out on the went out to the deflector dish. It was Worf, Picard, and Lynch. And since Lynch isn't a main character, he was expendable. He was a red shirt, and so he got Borgified.
Hmm.
And then Picard shot him later.
Yeah.
But the novels made him gay, not only gay, but interspecies gay. It was with a gay alien. So, yeah, science fiction. Anyways, what have you been playing, Scott? Well, we know what you've been playing. Actually, the audience doesn't know what you've been playing. So tell us about the last chapter of Minecraft Story Mode.
Yes, in the last chapter, you get your given access to the old builders, so that way you can Jesse can find his way home in the hall portals, and they basically you arrive in a big spleef arena, and
what?
you have to do these games to get the Atlas and get home, and I thought it was a really satisfying ending, and I liked the quote that was that you're given the option of saying was that teamwork makes the dream work, and I thought that was a nice ending to the whole story, you know, because that really is how Jesse gets through most of the story, is through his friends and teamwork and working together and redemption for people, even if they were total jerks in the beginning.
You know what I'd love to see? I'd love to see a crossover between Minecraft Story Mode and the Lego Movie. See what happens when the Minecraft people meet Master Builders.
That would be fun.
Yeah.
Maybe actually get to build something, you know?
Have
not
you, have
just
you,
like script like this to hit queue until it's built.
Yeah. So have you? Are you still doing Trails in the Sky Part 2?
Yeah, that. I'm nearing the end of it. I'm like chapter 7, and that also ends at chapter 8. So I'm getting too close to the end of that game. And I'm playing. I'm trying to play Abduction with my wife, but she's. It's the same. The situation is the same with Jordan and Diablo 3. He had to play with his wife. I have to play Abduction with my wife. She would get upset if I played it by myself.
Okay. So no one's playing Overwatch?
No.
Are you playing Overwatch there, TJ?
I pick up a game now and then. I haven't jumped on it like extensively.
The reason I'm asking is that a lot of achievement pop-ups have started coming up on my Xbox feed with it, and I'm wondering if there's something going on with Overwatch, like there's some special. So
they just released a new patch, and they may have messed with stuff there, and it was a patch on all systems. So that's the biggest thing right now with it.
So as for computer games, video or computer games, I haven't been playing much. I did do the NBA 2K demo, in which you can start a My Career in college and have your player go through that, which can later be imported into NBA 2K17. And the thing is that I can see it's just going to be as irritating. This next edition of NBA 2K is just going to be as irritating as the previous edition. And I haven't changed anything at all, except for some minor tweaks. The main complaint I have is that it feels like the previous game, except the controls feel a little floatier. And I don't know why. But we'll see. The graphics haven't changed that much. But one amusing thing I've noticed is that I play a 5'9 point guard, but in the cutscenes, it looks like I'm 6'5, which means everything around me is absolutely tiny. I don't think they understand that if someone's playing a 5'9 character, they should scale the person to be 5'9. On court, he looks fine. In real life, he looks like Andre the Giant. And, you know, it's weird. I've also been playing Star Trek Timelines, and I like it, but its pacing makes it boring. It's a free-to-play game with microtransactions. And right now I'm stuck at a point in which the characters that I have, and I have some good characters, aren't able to do the next level missions. So I'm doing a lot of time just doing shuttles and engaging in the community events. And the thing is that if I want to get through these the higher level missions, and by the way, it's like the third mission where I'm stuck, you know? It's like if I want to do it, I have to buy dilithium. So I can unlock better characters and items, and it's like, I'm still playing it, but it's sort of like I've lost some of my investment, you know, because I know that it's a sludge. It's just a sludge.
I had a friend who...
You paid a certain amount of money, you could get through that sludge a lot quicker, huh?
Sort of, kind of, yeah. I mean, I have Picard at level 89, which isn't...
Jeez.
It isn't too hard, because... he's at max level in terms of. You see, if you get two of the same character, because when you earn characters, sometimes they're the same character. Like, you get two Sulus of the same time period, the same type. Well, you can merge them to make them from a one-star character to a two-star character, right? So my Picard, I have to get all of his. See, there are four slots that boost them, and if I fill all four slots, I can advance them so I can get more levels. But in order to do that, you have to get the items from higher level stuff. So it's just slow. I actually managed to upgrade my ship from a stupid... Oh, I forgot the name of the class. It's a dinky class with four nacelles to something that looks sort of like a cross between Reliant and the Defiant. Wow, Reliant Defiant. That's kind of times. Its dish is welded into the main body. You know, it doesn't have the deck like the Enterprise, and it has nacelles that are flat out from it. So you can picture what that might look like. It's not the it's not the oh shoot, I forgot the name of the it's not an Excelsior class. It's sort of like a mini version of the Excelsior class. I'm pretty sure you know what it looks like. It's not the Excelsior class. It's like a squat version of the Excelsior class.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. And I have some high-level characters. I mean, I really got... I have Carol Marcus, and she can do a lot of things at once. Oh, and I got the Mirror Universe Phlox. I never watched Star Trek Enterprise, so I started to think what a Mirror Universe Doctor is like. I mean, we've seen EMH with its morality codes turned off. Hmm. And by God, he's frightening when with the morality codes off, EMH. Anyway. So, yeah, I mean, it's a whole piggly-piggly. I mean, I even got Wesley.
Wow.
And the thing is that you can send the lower characters who don't have much on missions off on the shuttles, and that's basically all I can do right now. Send those characters off on shuttle missions to get more stuff, check in to get bonuses. I know that I will be getting a bonus of the... see, a lot of the stuff that you get, you can buy from the Guardian at the Edge of the Universe, or whatever it was called. You know, the City on the Edge of Forever, you know, the Guardian.
Mm-hmm.
I'm about to get a free... thing from him, which is going to be a blue, a rare thing. So I don't know. I hope it's a character, so that it can help me out on some of the more advanced missions I'm doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that.
I had a close friend who is a big Star Trek fan. That, like, my whole experience, my entire knowledge of that game came from him, and he basically summed it up for me in the way of he wanted it to be so much more, and was so mad at like. It's obviously one of those things where the what you can pay for is not proportional at all to the time you have to put in to do it.
Like, or what regularly. You can earn on your own, yeah. I mean, you have to buy dilithium. There's no way to earn it outside of the game. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, shoot, I forgot to do the Quark's Dabo wheel. That only costs credits, and credits are easier to come by. You know, the first spin. And I got some good stuff from his Dabo wheel, too. So I'm going to have to try that after we stop this podcast. Yeah. But like I said, it's one of those things in which I just do stuff, leave it. 3 hours later, it tells me what my shuttles did. You know? I mean, it's fine if you can't afford anything. I mean, it's a lot better if you shell out, say, $10 for 700 dilithium. So, you know. There's that. Otherwise, I haven't really been playing much. I've been playing a lot of board games. And today I started buying Red Dragon in-game, what's it called, modules. And I've played it for a long time, but this is the first time I've actually owned it. And my favorite character is Gog the Half-Ogre. And if you don't know what Red Dragon in-game, it's a card game in which you're adventurers, and you just came back from an adventure. And now you're in the tavern, and you're wasting your money on gambling, booze, and beating the crap out of each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know... It's really, really fun, and you either lose all your money, or you get too drunk to stand, or you get too beat up to stand.
Yeah, that sounds like typical behavior.
It's extremely fun, and it's also family friendly, despite the content. You know, being in a bar and getting drunk.
Mm-hmm.
And you always can screw with people, like the wench takes their winnings. You know, the serving wench says, "Oh, was that my tip? I'll take it. Thank you." And they thought they won the gambling, but no, the waitress just took it as her tip. I got one of the... See, there's some single-character expansions, too. Most of them come with four characters. The single-character expansions are special ones. And the single-character one I got as well is one that everybody has to have, and that's Pookie, who is the rabbit that comes out of the magician's hat, except it's a psychotic rabbit. And it keeps on getting crazier and crazier and crazier until it attacks and just mauls everybody. Think of the killer rabbit from Monty Python and the Holy Grail, and you have a starting point for him.
That's fantastic.
Like I said, Red Dragon, you got to try it. It's fun. I also have Star Trek Ascendancy. I think I talked about this last week, the $100 board game. I still haven't found people to play, but I did pre-order the two modules that are coming out for the Cardassians and the Ferengi, so that you can have five people playing. And you know, it's just been a slow week for video games for me. I mean, next week is the next Batman chapter for Telltale. I don't know why people have been down on that story, and I really don't know, because it's really good Batman story, you know. Maybe they're frustrated by the fact that you play Bruce Wayne 60% of the time or 70% of the time.
Yeah. I don't know. It looks good, and I've always been on board with the idea of something where you focus more on Wayne than Batman, because there's millions and millions of games and stories where they focus on Batman all the time.
Yeah. And also, you're actually being a detective, which is something that a lot of games forget to do. Even the Batman Arkham games forgot they were supposed to be detective games too. I mean, Batman Arkham Asylum and Batman Arkham Origin, not Arkham Origins, Batman Arkham City. We're heavy on the detective stuff. The rest of them, eh. I mean, Batman Arkham Knight tried to bring it back, but it felt so thin.
Hmm.
You know. I don't know. I guess I'm just distracted by the fact they incorporated Death in the Family and the Killing Joke. By the way, have we talked about how bad a film The Killing Joke is?
No. I
remember we discussed it lightly, but I thought you liked it, but I guess not.
No, I thought that it might be promising because they were going for an R rating. Unfortunately, they utilized the R rating in all the wrong ways.
Dude, that's a shame.
It's more than a shame. It's pretty awful.
Here's the thing. There are two ways they could have gone wrong with The Killing Joke, and they decided, screw it. We'll go wrong in both ways. Yeah, Batman and Batgirl have sex.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of my favorite, Bob, geez, I forgot the name of his podcast, Bob, he said it perfectly, you know, of all bad things you can do, sleeping with your best friend's daughter is right at the top of the list.
Yeah, that's going to be weird at Thanksgiving, creepy Uncle Batman showing up.
And then he friend zones her and tells her to quit because, you know, and she starts beating up people because he friend zoned her afterward and is avoiding her. And then the Joker rapes her.
Yeah, they used it as a means to try to give Batman more of a investment in why he saving her. But it's stupid, because of course he would want to save her anyways. It's freaking Batgirl. You know, why would the hell would you make him into fucking weirdo Uncle Batman who has sex with his best friend's daughter?
And here's the thing. It's not a story about Barbara Gordon. She's just a MacGuffin in the original story. The story is about if you want to make it about anything, it's about Commissioner Gordon. Because here's a little hint. He was going to kidnap Barbara Gordon regardless, because she's Commissioner Gordon's daughter. Has nothing, absolutely nothing to do with her being Batgirl.
Yeah.
And if you're gonna make that story, you know what I would have done? I would have made The Killing Joke the first part of it, and the second part of it, Barbara learning to become the Oracle.
Yeah. I mean, the part where it's actually, where, like,
she actually gets to do something, and has something that requires her to be brave and be able to do something, and that is overcoming a handicap.
Yeah. It's a joke. It is a joke in the worst way.
That's what it is. Like I said, they and the depressing part is they have Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill doing the voices. That's the real depressing part.
Yeah.
You know, and having Joker get all rapey with Mark Hamill's voice. So, anyways, let's go to the news, which has nothing to do with anything that we've just been talking about. First news is all Battlefield 4 expansions are free until next week. And this comes to us from PC Gamer. Electronic Arts has been giving away Battlefield 4 and Battlefield Hardline DLC over the past several months as part of the run-up to the release of next month of Battlefield 1. If you happen to miss any, today brings good news. From now till September 19th, all 5 Battlefield 4 expansions are free for everyone. And new Battlefield 4 community missions are underway as well. Details about the Battlefield 4 giveaway are up at battlefield.com. Although as far as the DLC goes, all you have to really go is to Origin. and it'll set you up. Battlefield 1, by the way, is coming out on October 21st.
I feel like this is an elaborate attempt by some higher power to get me to buy this game, because I when I was at Call of Duty XP, I had a few people talking up Battlefield 4 to me and telling me that, like I was fully aware of, like, how bad it was when it launched, but they were telling me it's the best in the series, and it's well worth it.
Really better than 1942?
Yeah, it's so much better than it used to be, and they have a lot of, like, old-school maps. Some of the content, some of the DLC is aimed straight at bringing maps back from the old games.
Now, here's the thing, you know, I think Battlefield 4 is, what, like, $20 now? So, yeah. Basically, you'd be buying Battlefield 4 and all 5 expansions for $20.
Yeah, and that would be, like, even if you took the $20 value at face value, the DLC would easily be over, like, probably $60 altogether.
You're sad, by the way. I mean, overpriced DLC, we always talk about no one can do anything about it. I'm just saying, you know, it's like... So I'm checking the Battlefield official site for the price of Battlefield 4, which I'm pretty sure other people will probably sell for much less.
Uh-huh.
And it is... the digital deluxe version is $30. So I'm pretty sure that the regular version is like $10 less, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. We go to the Microsoft store and see how much they're selling it for the Xbox One, because that should be the regular price if it's just Battlefield 4. Oh, no, that's premium edition, $60. I doubt that's how much it costs. But even so, you're getting $60 worth of premium DLC, and I guess the PC version is... Yeah, the PC version is $30. So for PC owners, that's probably a no-brainer. Just get it for $30 and get all the DLC.
And if there's community missions on the way, it seems like... Because the other thing I would be worried about is what's going to happen when they release Battlefield 1. Are they going to just pull the support on Battlefield 4? Is that why they're trying to ship it off so quickly? But
well, Battlefield 1 is coming out, and this is an advertisement for Battlefield 1, essentially.
Uh-huh.
So they're going backwards as well? Battlefield 4 and then to Battlefield 1? This is Battlefield 5?
Yeah, because the thing is that Battlefield 1 is taking place in World War 1.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
An unrealistic World War One, but still World War One.
So actually, it's sort of like Battlefield Zero, because Battlefield 1942 is Battlefield One, and
Technically new. I mean, well, if it was a comic, they'd probably call it Issue Zero.
If they went by Resident Evil naming mechanics, I mean.
Oh dear. You know, at some point, I'm going to have to... I wonder, has Resident Evil 4 come out yet?
They're working on it. I don't know. Let me...
Because Remastered is supposed to... They released 6 and 5. You know, they're counting on backwards. Remastered 6, Remastered 5. Remastered 4 is supposed to come out soon, I guess, for PC, Xbox One, and PlayStation 4.
Let's see here.
Anyway, I doubt you have anything to say about this, Scott.
No, not really. I'm sorry.
It's okay. So, yeah, I mean, the problem is that I'm more of a single-player campaign sort of guy, which is why I'm ecstatic about Titanfall 2, actually having one this time.
Yeah.
You know, and Battlefield 4 does have a single-player, but it's sort of like cursory. You know, it's like, oh, we're supposed to have some here. Enjoy. So, the thing is that Battlefield multiplayer as a whole really has never appealed to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like when you're on the Unreal Tournament, facing Worlds map. If you're not careful, oops, snipe, start over.
Yeah, and the Battlefield, outside of, like, Bad Company, Bad Company is really the only Battlefield game that has ever had in a campaign that wasn't throwaway. Like, the Bad Company games are... not the best of the series, but their single players are most certainly the most invested that they ever got into it.
Hmm. Okay, so we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
All right. Sony confirms layoffs at London San Diego studios, from Game Informer. Sony London, the studio behind the PlayStation 4 VR exclusive, The London Heist, has been hit with layoffs as the game begins wrapping up production. GameIndustry.biz confirmed the redundancy and compulsory redundancy layoffs at Sony Interactive Entertainment's London studio.
Oh, God, love that business euphemism. They got fired!
Which is best known for its work on the SingStar series. Sony issued the following statement, citing the layoffs as part of the regular downsizing process many studios take after a game is complete. Sony says the studio will see further layoffs as a result of the restructuring. Meanwhile, there have been early reports that some staff at Sony San Diego have been laid off as well. According to senior UI designer Noah Watkins, his entire team has been laid off. Sony later issued a statement confirming the layoffs at Sony San Diego. Sony San Diego is best known for the MLB series, The Show, and recently Drawn to Death, which is helmed by Twisted Metal and God of War director David Jaffe.
You know, that's the thing that annoys me the most. I'm going with the game here, is that Sony is the only one who's producing any sort of baseball game. Microsoft's allowed. The entire contract allowed first-party baseball games, and I'm wondering why Microsoft hasn't produced any sort of baseball game. It's just weird. So it's interesting news in the light of that they're about to start selling the PlayStation Pro. You know, they should be getting influx of money. But I don't know. Maybe they don't feel very confident that the PlayStation Pro is going to sell.
Maybe. And on the other end, I mean, we see this all the time. I remember there was a big...
Paul's going to rip into you for saying that. I can just hear him right now. He's going to call it bullshit.
Well, I remember, everybody makes a big hullabaloo about it. I think the last one I remember being a big deal was after, what was it, from Avalanche Studios, the sandbox game.
Just Cause?
Just Cause 3. They laid off a ton of people after Just Cause 3 was put out, and that's just kind of, a lot of people work at
that game.
That's
what I think Paul got really angry about.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they bring in a ton of people to work on that game, and it sucks for a freelance programmer or developer, but from a business standpoint, why would you keep paying those people after the job is done?
Well, in this case, it sounds like the studios are going to be axed entirely.
So does that mean the Twisted Metal, God of War?
Oh, I'm pretty sure David Jaffe will find a job someplace.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, you know, it took him so long to even find any work. I don't know. I mean, he wanted to make Twisted Metal. He finally made Twisted Metal. It sucked. You know, I'm talking about the remake. So, I don't know. Poor Sweet Tooth the Clown. He can't find work anymore. But the thing is that who's going to make the show now? It's weird. And I don't know. I mean, Visual Concepts used to do all the sports games for Sega, and they stopped doing anything. You know, and there's no choice anymore. I don't know. But the thing that I think that is interesting is the fact that this is a VR company, and you'd think that they'd want to not axe people making VR games from them. I'm wondering if they have any confidence in the Sony PlayStation VR. I know they want it to succeed. But maybe they're realizing it's a tough sell to spend $500 and then spend $400 on a PlayStation Pro so that you can have a better VR. I don't know.
Yeah, and I've been talking about this all the time. Until you have that one game that's like the iconic thing. It's the you gotta have that Mario Brothers that you bundle VR with. It's not gonna sell unless they... And unless some game developer steps up and makes that experience that makes the general consumer say, well, I guess I can't skip this. Like, that was Sonic the Hedgehog with Sega. That was Mario with most of the Nintendo systems. That was Halo with Xbox. You got to have that iconic game that you can bundle the system with. And it's not – and I don't care about Eve Valkyrie. I don't.
Actually, you know what? There's a problem. It hasn't been – I don't feel – a game has been bundled with a system in a very, 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 very long time. It's usually the system is by itself, and you have to go and buy whatever game is available at launch. It hasn't been that way in a very long time.
That's not true. They bundled the PS4 with Destiny and Left 4 Dead, and
yeah, was that a bundle or was it actually? Here's the thing. What he's talking about is like when they bundled Donkey Kong with the NES, right? Actually, they bundled Donkey Kong and Jarmite with the NES.
The NES had Super Mario and Duck Hunt.
The original NES launch, and this is before that bundle. First, it launched with Jarmite and Duck Hunt.
Yeah.
Because I had Robbie the Robot. I still have Robbie the Robot. He's sitting over there on my mantle. Doing nothing, by the way. And then later, when they got Super Mario Bros., they said, oh, well, this is a much better game than Gyromite.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know. Poor Gyrobot.
But the Destiny bundle was a full-on bundle because the PS4...
No, not a bundle, but was there a regular PS4 machine that wasn't a bundle with games?
Yeah, there's plenty of not bundled PS4 systems that you can get.
Let me put this way.
I feel like it's not like that. You can get there's a bundle for Uncharted 4 and PS4, but it's like limited time.
Here's
you know,
the thing.
They only do like $400.
I mean, there was a $400 PlayStation 4 thing that you could buy, right? No games in it. What he's talking about is that there's going to be a game included in it. Like, the Atari 2600 came bundled with combat.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like, you know...
And ColecoVision came bundled with Donkey Kong.
It's because it's this tactic of, hey, look, we're going to bundle this game with this system right now, but it's only for a limited time. It's only like 200 or something. So if you don't get it, you can't buy it later. You'll have to buy it separately later, so you lose out. And I hate that tactic. It sucks.
So on that happy note, let's go to the next news item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. All right. Valve tackles dodgy devs cheating Steam review scores. And this is from Ars Technica. I had actually seen something about this. In an effort to stop developers from artificially inflating review scores on Steam, Valve has changed the system so that reviews written by users who received a game by a developer or a CD-distributed license key will no longer count towards the review rating. The change will also affect reviews from Kickstarter backers that receive a Steam key as part of their backer rewards. The Steam review system was updated in May so that the overall review rating, positive, negative, or mixed, is displayed at the top of each game page. The idea was to better show the current state of the game, particularly as more of them enter early access and evolve over time. Unfortunately, Valve claims that many developers have been abusing the system by giving out keys to friends or paid-for reviews services in order to bolster the overall review score. Valve estimates that at least 160 titles have substantially greater percentage of positive reviews by users that activated the product with a CD key compared to customers that purchased the game directly on Steam. While it admits there can be legitimate reasons for discrepancy, including strong audiences outside of Steam and popular Kickstarter campaigns, for the most part it says the abuse is clear and obvious. Valve will not be removing the ability for developers to issue Steam keys, but in cases where it finds developers have duplicated or generated reviews in large batches, or found review accounts linked to developer in question, it will be ending business relationships. Gamers that purchase or receive a game outside of Steam will also be able to write a review, but will no longer contribute to the overall review score.
Okay, you wanted to say something about this, Scott?
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting, because I know a lot of times on these reviews, you'll see these people saying, oh, this is a great, awesome game. And then there'll be a one-star person saying the exact opposite. So I think...
Well, you'll see that on Amazon, too. I mean...
Yeah.
The problem I have is that if I buy a game on CD, I won't be able to contribute to the review score? Really? It's penalizing me for not buying a game on Steam? Well, screw you, Valve.
Not only that, this is a enormous hit to indie developers who rely on the people who kickstarted the game. This is a death sentence to a lot of Kickstarter devs.
They can still write the review, it just won't contribute to the score. They should probably get rid of the score altogether and just have people read the reviews, see what people think, and just really take the time to gauge the what the reviews say and just remove the score altogether.
Well, it's more like it shows positive, mixed, or negative. It's not an actual score.
That's true.
Yeah. And the fact of the matter, it's like I have a bunch of indie developer friends, and they're talking about, well, this is kind of going to screw me over because I was relying on people that will buy the game after it's out to read those reviews from the people that tried it before and maybe make some sales in the end. If none of it contributes, then they're not going to see, they're not going to get that promotion. And not only that, but this means that those games will not end up showing up on the front page of Steam as they normally would.
That's even worse.
Yeah. And that means that they're not going to get any sort of spotlight. They're not going to have any sort of advertising except by their friends and their own word of mouth. Steam is so bad at conflict control.
Yeah. Let's go back to the stories of these gamer gators starting to put these tags on games. These negative tags on them just because they talk about stuff they don't like. You remember this?
Yeah. Like, I don't know. It is a problem, but there's a lot of things on Steam that are a problem, and every time Valve gets involved, it's like this sweeping general move that targets the thing, but creates so many other problems.
See, what I don't understand is why not just punish the people who are duping reviews, you know, who are faking reviews, and just do that. There's no reason to say, hey, Kickstarter backers, screw you. You can't contribute to the reviews because you're a Kickstarter and you're probably in buddy buddies with the developers, which is not true.
Yeah. I mean, look at Mighty Number 9. People fucking hate that game. if a game sucks, people will say that it sucks, and it will be a lot more people that say it sucks than even if there are those handful of people that were paid to say it was good.
You know, and I know who's really happy about this. It's like people like GOG or people like Gamesgate, you know? I really feel bad for Gamesgate because they sound so much like Gamergate. Or Green Man Gaming, you know, all these other distribution people are saying yes, go ahead, screw it up, Valve, we don't care, we don't mind. I mean, I can go, if you go to good old games, GOG's reviews, you can see instantly what people think. You know, they give it numerical scores, which is fine. I'm not a big fan of numerical scores, that's fine. But, you know, all you have to do is just read the damn reviews, or at least read the first two sentences. Read the first sentence of any review, wherever it is, Steam or GOG or wherever, and you're going to find out what that person thinks, you know? And by the way, when a lot of people can tell when someone's a shill. The language and all that stuff, you know, say, that sounds sort of like a shill. For those of you who listen to this podcast a long time ago, before the 200th episode, remember that Derek Schaumer used to say, you know, when I read an Amazon review, I always read the 1-star reviews. I don't read the 5-star. I read the 1-star reviews. I want to know what's wrong with the product before I see what's right with it. You know, because finding out what's wrong with it is a lot more useful than finding out what people gush about.
Yeah.
You know, because
you learn from the mistakes.
Yeah, you know, like you'll see stuff like, well, after 3 months, this thing, you know, malfunctioned, and I couldn't get it back, or, you know, stuff like that. I mean, you'll see the 1-star reviews that say, oh, well, Amazon shipped it to me in the box with damage. No, we don't care about those reviews. That's Amazon's fault, not the product's fault, you know. Mm-hmm. We want to hear what future problems may happen. Like when I was buying a clothes dryer for an apartment, I read the 1-star reviews because I wanted to see if there was anything potentially wrong with them, you know, and I found very few 1-star reviews for the product I have, and it had a lot of reviews, you know, and I said, fine, I'll buy this one because, you know, it doesn't seem to have as many problems with it. Things will now function after a while, but you know what, I want to make sure that the thing I have doesn't have something that says, oh yeah, well, it suffers mechanical breakdown after 2 months, you know.
That's you want to find out the worst of what you're going to have to put up with, because everything else you're going to enjoy.
Yeah.
So that's the consumer report for today. Any last words about this item?
Nah, Valve is stupid.
I would just suggest they not rely on just Steam or Valve for reviews and spread out to other sources like GOG and other ways of getting advertising. That's one thing you can do.
I think, with all those problems, I still think that Steam Greenlight is a great thing. I mean, they managed to bring indie games to the fore, Steam Greenlight. And yeah. I know a lot of publishers really rely on Steam Greenlight to get the buzz going.
I wish I'd stopped seeing anime dating games in the front page. That would be nice.
I had a chance on Humble Bundle to get the what is it called? The Hakuten, the bird
boyfriend
dating game.
Thing?
Yeah, had a full boyfriend.
Yeah,
I should have plunked down a few bucks for that. It was a bundle with all stuff and had a full boyfriend, just to see how weird a bird dating game can be. Is it a human dating birds or is it birds dating birds?
I think you're a human, right? You got girls with kitty ears. You got all sorts of weird stuff.
And had a full boyfriend? I think it's just birds, though.
That one probably bird, yeah.
But I'm wondering, are you playing a human or a bird who's dating these birds? And I'll tell you something, I would not be shocked if it was a human dating birds, because, these games are weird. Or what about the hentai? The hentai dating games, which are borderline rape. Those are some weird stuff. Japan, you come up with weird stuff, and we love you for it.
Okay.
Any company that comes up with a boonga boonga can't be all bad.
Yes, it is a human dating birds.
Okay.
Just so you know.
It's still not as weird as Boonga Boonga, though. For those who don't know, Boonga Boonga is an arcade game in Japan in which you stick your finger up someone's ass. It's a physical thing. You have the finger, and you can do it for your people you hate, like your ex-wife, your teacher, a pedophile, and you score for how deeply and how forcefully you shove it up their ass.
That is terrifying.
It's even more terrifying? Do a Google search, a Google image search for Boonga Boonga, just to see what this thing looks like.
Oh.
I don't think I want that in my search history.
Anyways, moving on to the next item. League of Legends surpasses 100 million monthly players from US Gamer. Although other competitors have launched, Riot Games' League of Legends is still the largest game in the MOBA genre. In an interview with Polygon, Riot Games founders Mark Merrill and Brendan Beck revealed that the game surpassed 100 million active monthly players, one of whom is named TJ Denzer. It is hard to parse, but at the end of the game, those things don't even feel real, said Beck. The coolest thing is when we actually are at the live events and get to meet fans face-to-face, only then does it start to feel real. Otherwise, they're just numbers on a screen all over the world. I will interrupt this article, and I've gone to two of their parties at E3, and they're always held in bars with awesome bar food. They hold the best parties. Very simple. Bar food, drinks. You can't get much more simpler, basic, and wonderful than that. Our players have stuck with us an incredible loyalty that really challenges us at every day to feel like we earn it, he added. They helped create this community where all this fan art is shared, and all these people, and there's all these people to hang out with, and there's these phenomenal streams to watch the advent of streaming. It's that stuff that our players have built around us that has allowed us to happen. The pair also revealed quickly how the game has reached its first milestone of 10,000 concurrent players. way back in the day, within 2 months of the launch. Essentially, from the word go, League of Legends has been growing very quickly. That's why it is still one of the most profitable PC titles worldwide, according to Superdata Research. Riot Games founders also revealed that they're still working on what's next. Within Riot's research and development group, the company is trying out a small project, most of which we will never see the light of day. I think one of the reasons why League of Legends sprung up so quickly is that it was, it's not Dota.
Yeah.
People want a choice, and Dota's one choice, and League of Legends the other. And the funny thing is that if I remember correctly, one of the chief complaints about why people went to League of Legends was that the people in Dota tended to be complete assholes. And now, guess what? We can be even bigger assholes. So, TJ, here's the thing. Early days of League of Legends, people were very helpful and helped you out and, you know, and showed you what you should be doing. And this is, I think, in the first year. And then that milk curdled. Like they said, okay, we have enough people that aren't playing Dota. Now we can be pricks.
Yeah. And, you know what? There are good people in League of Legends. There are teams that whether I win or lose with them, I have a good time and I enjoy myself and they enjoy themselves and we all laugh about it at the end. It's like, that was a good game, good plan.
Now you play with friends, with each friends on both teams, or are you just friends on one team?
No, these are just, like, these matches are just randos. Good experience with.
Have a beginner's thing which you can just go? Something like that, you know, a beginner's ranked thing.
There's unranked, and then there's custom games and tutorials, and I think it's one of the more inviting of the systems.
Okay.
But also, like, I don't know. The difference between the people, a lot of people, is that the moment a team starts losing, you start to see the cracks come out.
Well, that's generally true in most games. And one thing is that I actually, you know, I do enjoy watching Twitch streams of League of Legends, even though I don't know what the hell's going on.
Yeah, and I think the art style has also always appealed to me and a lot of people a bit more, because Dota is very... It's very based around that original Warcraft aesthetic that was just straight up almost... sort of closer to the Warhammer style of just grim gothic as opposed to the colorful style you see in Warcraft today.
Didn't the first Dota spring out of Warcraft?
Yeah, it was a mod for Warcraft 3.
Yeah, so obviously it's going to have that aesthetic, although we're talking about Dota 2, and it managed to keep... the thing is that the Rebel FM podcast still plays Dota 2 constantly, so you still have very devoted fans, but still 100 million people playing concurrently, that just blows my mind.
Yeah, it's like, I think Dota 2 still has it beat when it comes to esports, but League of Legends is quickly catching up. They have so many teams all over the world, like, just everywhere playing this game, and people are super hyped on it. It's fun. It's fun when you find a community where people aren't assholes to each other and you enjoy it. And those exist in League of Legends.
And the thing is, all these Dota teams and these League of Legends teams, they become famous, you know. Like, they start talking about, oh, well, you know, I forgot the name of it. You know, like, Excite 2 was really good last year, but this year they've had a lot of problems, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you follow any teams?
I've been off and on following Cloud9.
Okay. I've heard of that team. See, mostly the teams I hear of, though, are the ones who are banned from playing League of Legends and Dota because they did something nasty or they were underhanded during their tournaments.
Yeah.
You know, those are the ones I really know about.
It's also interesting to follow that because you see about, like, what kind of stress these... I could never do this as a professional thing because those people are under such... horrible stress.
Oh, forget them. Think about the StarCraft 2. You watch these players playing on ultra speed. It's like, you know, how normal RTS is, you click once every minute. These guys are clicking 50 times a minute. It's like click, 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 click.
It's
click.
Not just a click. They know the shortcut keys on the keyboard. That's really what they're doing.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying it's like, these people are almost robots, you know? I'm not even going to say speed chess. It's like, oh, he's using this movement, so I better do this adjustment. But it's like, instead of, you know, a turn, it's more like in a tenth of a second, it's like, oh, he's doing that, I better do this.
Yeah. One of the things that came out in the League of Legends esports scene is that, there is a tendency by Riot to release a patch pretty close to major tournaments. And when you're the kind of person who hinges upon the data like a professional player. You hinge upon the data of every given character and have to study that stuff regularly. The stress of having to relearn things right before
you know that Riot does that on purpose.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the thing is that they could have released this patch a couple of months ago, but no, they're going to release it now. But I think it's actually a good thing because it keeps you on your toes and it keeps you, you know, from getting into a routine and getting too practiced at it, you know.
Yeah, it definitely – you definitely see the teams that sink and swim based on that.
You know, it reminds me of Street Fighter players in which they have everything down to the pixel. If a pixel is changed, they have to rearrange all their strategies.
Although if that happened in football, baseball, or basketball, I think we'd see a lot more nervous breakdowns in the professional scene.
Well, the thing about that is that they're too randomized, and, you know, you have to deal with human judgment, not a computer judgment. So, I mean, we saw it with Levon Hernandez having strikes being called a foot outside the strike zone. You know, no one could handle that. So here's a question of the week, now that I think about it. Do you watch live streams of any games? And if so, which ones do you live stream? How about you, TJ? Do you watch live streams on Twitch or something like that?
Very specific events. Games Done Quick is always fun.
Okay.
Summer Games Done Quick, Good Games Done Quick. It's a charity event for one, and you're helping people out. But it's also interesting to see the latest speed runs on some of the more contemporary or even older classics out there. Like always. Watching people speedrun Mirror's Edge is always really fun, and with games done quick, you get some of the biggest pros in that scene coming up and putting on.
And now free barf bags.
It's a hell of a show, I'll say that much.
Do you ever watch? Excuse me. Oh, damn it. Do you ever watch?
I only occasionally watch live streams of games if it's someone I know, like a friend or some other popular YouTuber, not often, no.
Do you ever watch any tournaments, TJ?
Call of Duty. I've been getting into that.
Well, obviously, since you went to the Call of Duty XP event.
Yeah. So I watched a lot of the lead up to the World Championships recently, and it was exciting. It was really fun to see like who were the standouts, who were the surprises. Everyone thought that this one team, Fnatic, was going to take it all, and they got beaten out in the first round. And upsets like that are it's like an upset in any given sport. It's crazy. It changes everything for everyone.
Excuse me. So. I do like to watch live streams of games, small indie games that have just been released that I've never heard of, just to see what they're like and what people are saying about them as they play them. You know? There was this one game, I forgot what it's called, in which you play a dot. It's not Thomas Was Alone. It was something else. And I watched because I wanted to see if it was worth buying. So I sometimes use these streams as a way to preview a game without actually playing it, you know? And sometimes... I remember I did watch a Pokemon tournament on Twitch, and there was this one moment that had everybody screaming when this guy was down to his last Pokemon, and the Pokemon did an extremely effective attack, and the other guy missed, and he did another extremely effective attack again. And the round was over, and it was like a major comeback. It was like everybody was stunned.
The RNG gods favored him that day.
Yeah. So occasionally I'll put on, if I want background noise, I'll put on some League of Legends Twitch, even though I don't know what's going on. And I mean because there's always a tournament going on somewhere. I've noticed from League of Legends. Every day there's a tournament of League of Legends somewhere, a professional tournament. So I just do that, you know.
Oh yeah, they run from the regionals in any given country to the they go all the way from the lowest scene all the way up to the worlds.
Yeah. But mostly, you know, and when I say that, I mean matches that are actually announced by announcers, you know, who are giving the play-by-play. You know, and I always like, you know, when they start saying how stupid someone was, I'll turn my head to the screen to see what happened. So anyways, so that was the question of the week. What do you like to watch live streams of in terms of video games? Let us know. So look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. You can join feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, have at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us in iTunes. Subscribe to us in iTunes and leave some iTunes comments. I am at Jonah Falcon.
I'm at Johnny Chodes.
And I am at Alpushard.
Yeah. So, yeah, TJ wanted to have dinner with his wife someplace early, so we did this a little half an hour earlier so he can go do whatever he needs to do.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. Anyways, okay. We will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Take care.
Hey, Cortana, Xbox on.